new sefer in Chamisha Chumshei Torah. And again, as we've seen with each time we shifted sefer, it's a very different focus to what comes up before then. So with Sefer Bereshit, it was the Sefer Yetzirah, Sefer Rishon, the creation of the world, the families of the Avot. Sefer Shemot was the development of a nation and Yetziat Mitzrayim. Sefer Vayikra was Torah Karnim, largely to do with the Korbanot. And now Sefer Bamidbar is kind of everything else that happens during the next 38 years in the Midbar, and a few minutes was here and there, and till they were almost ready to go into Eretz Yisrael. So sort of a lot of time covered relative to Sefer Shemot and Sefer Vayikra. Not a vast number of mitzvot, not a vast amount of narrative, but sort of various issues come up. Let's start at the very beginning. Vayidaber Adonai Moshe b'Midbar Sinai b'Ohel Moed, Shehashem spoke to Moshe in the wilderness of Sinai, b'Ohel Moed, and it was in the tent of meeting, b'Echad l'Chodesh Hasheni b'Shana Hashenit, on the first of the second month in the second year, so that's the first of Iyal, let's say, Tam Eretz Yitzrayim, after they'd gone out of Mitzrayim, Le'mor saying, Se'u et Rosh Kol Adat B'nei Yisrael Mishpochotam Levet Avotam. So count the heads of all the congregation of Israel, that according to their families and their filial houses, the number of names of all the males according to their heads, from the age of 20 upwards, everybody who was suitable for the army in Israel, you should count them. Letzivotam in their masses, Atava Aharon, you and Aharon. So we've got lots of questions on these pesukim, and we'll look at examine some of the questions. I want to start off though with an observation made by Rabbeinu Bechaya. I don't promise not to repeat some of this or develop it on Friday night, so you'll forgive me if you'll hear it twice, but it'll be in different ways. Rabbeinu Bechaya quotes the Medrash Rabbah that says, "B'midbar Sinai, begimel dvarim nitna Torah." The Torah was given through three mediums, if you like: Ba'ish, Bamayim, and Bamidbar. It was given in the context of fire, the context of water, and the context of Midbar. What's the relevance about these three contexts? Ba'ish, in what way was the Torah given through fire? Diktiv, Har Sinai Ashan Kulo, Mipnei Asher Yarad Adonai Alav Ba'ish. So at the time of Matan Torah, Har Sinai was very smoky because Hashem had come down onto it with fire. Bamayim, where do we find water in the context of the giving of the Torah? Diktiv, because the Pasuk says, Adonai B'tzeit Cham Seir B'tzad Cham Istei Edom, Eretz Rasha Gam Shamayim Natfu, Natafu Gam Avim Natfu Mayim. So this is in the Shirat Devorah and Sefer Shoftim, saying that at the time of Matan Torah, that Gam Shamayim Natafu, the heavens dripped and the clouds dripped with water. So we've got the notion of water in the context of Matan Torah as well. And Bamidbar, where do we get the notion of the Torah being given in the context of the Midbar? Dichtiv a pasuk vaydabar Adonai Moshe b'Midbar Sinai. Hashem spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu in Midbar Sinai. V'lama nitna b'gimul dvarim halalu. So what's the relevance of these three media? Lomar lecha, to tell you, ma elu chinam lecho ba'olam, af ha-Torah chinam lecho ba'olam. Just as these things are free for everybody in the world. Fire, you never have to pay for fire. Electricity, maybe, but not fire. Water, pay water rates, but essentially, water in the sea is there for everybody. Water in a lake is there for everybody. And the Midbar is also an open area. Lomar lecha, to tell you, ma elu b'chinam, chinam l'chol b'olam, af ha-Torah chinam l'chol b'olam. The Torah is equally accessible to everybody as these three things are. V'chein hu omer, We've got psukim that support that. Hoikol tamei lechulamayim. Everybody who's thirsty can go to water. Lama ba midbar. Why was the Torah given in the midbar? Lo malacha she'inatam konar Torah. Person doesn't acquire Torah. I mean, doesn't really know it well. Achei asat smor hefker kemidbar. Until he makes himself hefker, like the wilderness. Now, the question is, what do we mean by hefker? Hefker, usually when you talk about something being hefker, it means that it's ownerless. So it's up for grabs. It's up for grabs. That's, when you've got something, this is hefker. Anybody who wants it, you can have it. So it's kind of interesting because if Rabbi Nebuchadnezzar was saying that the Torah is hefker, like the midbar is hefka, meaning anybody can grab the Torah. It's not reserved for anybody. Anybody can get access to it. Then I'd have understood it. But in actual fact, what he's saying is something a bit different. She'ein adam koneh Torah, ad she'aseh atzmo hefka k'midbar. The person has to make himself hefka, like the midbar. So what do we mean? What do we mean by that? So I think the standard way of understanding that, the conventional wisdom, is that it means you need to be humble. You need to have humility. That's a sense of unimportance. Something which is hefka isn't important. And therefore, if a person feels like he's hefka, that he's unimportant, so then he's going to be able to learn more. A humble person will always learn more than an arrogant person. So that's one way of understanding it. It occurred to me that there might be another way of understanding it. And hefka means something which is ownerless. And the midbar is hefker in the sense that it's open. You know, anybody can get in there. It's not closed. It's not like, my back garden, which nobody else can get into. A midbar is hefker. Anybody can get into there. And perhaps what we're saying here is that in terms of to be able to make a kinyan on Torah, you need to be very open-minded. That's to the ideas that you're going to encounter. There'll be things, it's one of these interesting things, we talk about, in the Torah world, some people are too open-minded. We don't want to be too broad-minded. We've got rules and everything. All these broad-minded people who, go off and do all sorts of things that we feel uncomfortable with. So, in certain contexts, we don't like broad-mindedness. But if you want to be influenced by Torah, then in actual fact, you have to, as a colleague once said to me, suspend your disbelief. That's what you need to get people to do. You need to get them to suspend their disbelief. But I guess that's true in terms of, kinyan of Torah. So there are all sorts of, you sit down, take it as a new text. You'll learn, Eved Ivri. That's, or Eved Kanani. I said, oh, right, slavery. I don't hold with slavery. I'm not going to engage with that. You learn another, that's Ha'ish Koneh, that, under the chuppah, the husband acquires the wife. All right, I don't believe in, men making a kinyan on women. That's whatever it is. Hashem, drowning all the Egyptians, or killing all the Egyptian firstborns. Oh, well, that was cruel and not fair. Disproportionate, right? Suitable for what's going on. So I don't hold with that. You're not going to be able to engage properly with Torah. You have to be open to say to yourself, "Hold on a minute. This makes me feel uncomfortable. But what's going on there? Fine, I feel uncomfortable. But what's it all about? Should I be imposing my views on Torah?" Or should Torah be imposing its views on me? And how are we going to reconcile the two? So I think that might be, to some degree, what it means. The person should make himself hefka, like the midbar, meaning open to new ideas.
No mushroom on the H, though.
Correct. That seems to be absent from here. Need to check in the Medrash itself, see if it makes reference to the Eish. But it's it says Elu Chinam. So I mean, Eish is clearly Chinam. Nobody, you don't have to pay for Eish at all.
You got this thing about you have it with the powders and they get burnt.
Right. So, I mean, there's lots of things one could say about the Eish. But it hasn't. You're right. Okay. Let's think about Bamidbar's being the book of Numbers. It's the book of Numbers. Sorry, tell.
Good question. Does it have a positive or a negative connotation?
Sorry?
In a halachic
what?
In a term.
What term?
Does
sorry.
Does Hefker have a positive or a negative connotation? In other words, if you say something is, to me, and I could be wrong, Hefker usually means something negative, not necessarily.
I wouldn't say it's either positive or negative. It's just, it's, you know, describing a state. It's almost like, you know, it's almost like paros. You know, I remember having a debate with a chavruta once that's, is paros worse than milchiks or better than milchiks? You know, which is, you know, fleishiks is obviously what you want, right? If you're not having fleishiks, so you have paros, you know, paros is all right, you know, that's, but you know, so you have fish, you know, on Friday night. But to get a piece of quiche or lasagna, you know, is that, or is it, you know, at least a piece of quiche or something, you know, but when you end up with paros, you're neither fleishik nor milchik, so it's neither good nor bad. It's just, you know, you've got, you know, something which is my rishut, something which is your rishut, and you've got something which is hefka. I don't think it's a positive or a negative state. So Sefer Bamidbar is the book of Numbers. That's... And we're going to, the big question is, why do we start off with the numbers, with the census? It's the book of Numbers because it starts off with the census and it finishes off with the census. But why have we got this census at this, this point? That's, so let's see what Rashi says. But Mibar Sinai Bechad Lachodesh Hasheni, Mitochi Batan Lefanav, Mone Otan Kol Shah. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves Am Yisrael so much, he counts them regularly. When they left Mitzrayim, the people were counted. So that's not, there's no census really there. But if you look in Parashat Bo, you see that where it says that they left Mitzrayim, it says they were 600,000 people. So there was the HaKadosh Baruch Hu counted them there. Kishinaflu ba'egel mena'an. And after the Chet HaEgel, this is presumably relating to the census in Parshat Ki Tisa, Mena'an, HaKadosh Baruch Hu also counted them, Leida HaNotarim, to see how many people had survived. And then, Kishebala HaShot Shechinato L'Tochan, Mena'an. Then after the Mishkan had been set up, HaKadosh Baruch Hu also counted them. Ve'echad b'Nisan hukama Mishkan. The Mishkan was erected on the 1st of Nisan. Ve'echad b'Iyar mena'an, and then they were counted on the 1st of Iyar. So this Rashi is interesting from two perspectives, at least. One perspective is it's very similar to Rashi at the beginning of Sefer Shemot. Beginning of Sefer Shemot, we've got Ve'eleh Shemot b'nei Yisrael haba Mitzrayima, and then the list of the 12 Shevatim. And Rashi says that why are they listed? Because we know who they are. So why do they need to be listed? So he says because HaKadosh Baruch Hu loved them so much, he counted them regularly. So we're seeing a certain parallel there, which, you know, I think is of interest. The second thing which is interesting is that Rashi is telling us what's the reason that HaKadosh Baruch Hu counted them now. The answer is no reason. That's, I mean, other than, you know, it's a sign of affection. It's, you know, it's if somebody gives you 100 gold coins, you'll count them when you get them, you'll count them next week, you'll count them when you go home. You'll count them regularly. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu counts Am Yisrael regularly, but there's no particular reason why there was this census at this point in time. It wasn't serving any purpose. That's what Rashi says. The Rashbam says differently. Suet Rosh Koladat, the Fisha Me'atat Srichim Lalechet L'Eretz Yisrael. At this point, Am Yisrael, B'nai Yisrael, were getting ready to go into Eretz Yisrael. That Uvenei Esrim Ru'uyim Latseip Tzvaha Milchama, and the people aged 20, they are the people who are going to be the soldiers. Shari Besrim B'chodesh Hashini Hazen Ne'olah He'anan. We know because it's 3 weeks later, on the 20th of the month, the cloud rose. Said, okay, right, we're going towards Eretz Yisrael. That's why at the beginning of the month, Kadosh Baruch said, you know what, it's time to count them. So again, we do, when we read Parashat Bamidbar, we don't really think of it, you know, in this sense, because it's the beginning of the second year. We've got a whole... We never find them going to Eretz Yisrael. You know, at best, we find them getting ready to go to Eretz Yisrael at the end of Sefer Bamidbar, which is 38 years later. But in actual fact, they were getting ready to go into Eretz Yisrael before then. And then the Meraglim came and everything got delayed, etc. But essentially, they were getting ready to go into, you know, they'd left Mitzrayim, they'd had Matan Torah, they built the Mishkan, and now it was time to move on to the next stage. The next stage took a long time in coming, but at this point in time, they weren't expecting the next stage to take a long time in coming. So Rashi's given us a reason. Rashbam has given us, he's done two things. He's answered two questions. He's answered why we've got the census, and he's also answered for us why people aged 20 and over were counted. Let's look at the Ramban. The Ramban, though, adds two further aspects or dimensions to what we're talking about. That's and why is there this census? So if you look four lines down, so this is asking why is it that, you know, we're given the number of people in each tribe, and then at the end of chapter one, we're given the total number altogether. He says, I'm not quite sure why we need it. You know, we could just add up the numbers in all the tribes, and then you've got your final number. Why does it need to be repeated? Ulai lahodiyam chasto alehem. So perhaps it's to let us know HaKadosh Baruch Hu's chesed, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's love for the Jewish people. Ki b'shivim nefesh yadu avoteihem mitzrayim. Their ancestors came to Mitzrayim as a group of 70 people. V'atahim k'chol hayam. And now there are as many as the sand on the seashore. Kach v'kach b'nei esrim. So many people, the age of 20. V'acharei kol davar kol dever magifa. Yimneim. L'hodiya ki hu mashki lagoyim yimchatz. V'yadav tirpena. That's so after every dever magifa, everything bad that happens to the Jewish people, they're counted again. That's to show that the forces that are working against us can't really harm us that much. So he's relating to what Rashi's saying. He's saying it's not just Stam that HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves us, but it's also to communicate a message to us. Tell us, you know, you're a bit down about things. You think, you know, some people have died, some people have killed, you're stuck in the midbar, whatever it is. Just look at how amazing your people, you know, 210 years ago you were 70 people. You were just a big family. Now you're a proper nation. So that's number one, why they were being counted. It's really a bit of a development of what Rashi said. As you know, Rashi said, it's lohodiyachi batan, how much, you know, we see how much, or mitochi batan, we see how much HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves them, both from his perspective, that's why he counts us, and also to let us know the wonders that have been done for us. That's number one in the Ramban. Number two is particularly interesting. So remember, how was the census done? Right? It wasn't done that everybody just sends a text on their phone and all the texts got counted up. Right? There's a machloket in the Mepharshim whether it had to be whether this was done with the machatzit hashekel or not. But whether it was or it wasn't make a difference. In either event, they didn't just, you know, pop their money into a box that was on every attached to all the post boxes in the midbar, partly because there weren't post boxes, but also because the way that this census was supposed to be conducted was that everybody passed in front of Moshe and Aaron and gave their name, said who they were. Presumably there was somebody writing it down or counting it all up, whatever. And then either somebody counted up the list of names or something, or they gave a half shekel at the time, but they identified who they were and which shevet they came from. That's, so they came before Moshe and Aaron. V'unodalehem bishmo. They would identify themselves by name. And this gives the person, you know, big zechut and a big good opportunity for life. Because the person has formerly been identified as part of Bnei Israel, and you're part of, you get the zechut of being part of this large congregation. And there's a chut, in being counted by Moshe and Aaron. Ki yasimu alehem einam letova. Moshe and Aaron. Now, here it's using the notion of the ayin tova. I'm speaking on Shavuot night about the ayin hara. Here we've got the opposite of the ayin hara. The ayin tova. What's the ayin tova? Well, when we discover what the ayin hara is on Shavuot night, we'll have a sense of what the ayin tova is. But it's presumably, you know, a sense of blessing. That's, you know, they stand in front, they get a smile from Moshe and Aaron. That's, you know, there are a lot of people, 600,000 people had to come past, so I don't think they had the chance to give everybody a long schmooze. It was you know, the half shekel is, I suppose, it's, you know, the Lubavitcher Rebbe in reverse. You know, the Lubavitcher Rebbe used to give out a dollar. That's, you went to the Lubavitcher Rebbe and you get a dollar from the Rebbe. I think the idea was that you were supposed to use that dollar to give it to tzedakah, so it's helping you do a mitzvah. I don't know if anybody ever, yeah, most people framed it and kept it, or kept it in their wallet as a, you know, as a, that's a segula from
you
the.
Give a different
one. Yeah.
You frame that one. And,
yeah, exactly.
You frame up the picture and give it to you.
That's right. In any event, you know, they gave the money, but they got the smile. You know, they queued up, they got the smile, almost like a bracha. And that was the reason they had this sense that in terms of to give everybody a chance to shake the hand of Moshe and Aaron. That's what it was, that's one of the things that it was about, according to the Rambam. Now, if we glance back at the Psukim, we'll see in Sukkim Bet and Gimel, there are a number of different words used for taking a census. In Pasuk Bet, we've got Se'u et Rosh Kol Adat Bnei Yisrael, which I translated as count, but literally means lift up. Then we've got B'mispar Shemot, the number of names. And then in Pasuk Gimel we've got Tifgadu Otam. Again, you should count them. Different ways of, you know, each of these terms has a slightly different meaning. It's interesting, absent from here is Limnot, any notion of counting in terms of the Minyan. And there's presumably a lot to say about why different terms are used in different context, the same context, etc., etc. Let's see what the Kli Yakar says about this term se'u, which means to raise up. So, afal pishe Rashi pireshu l'shon kabbalat cheshbon. Rashi says all it means is basically take a census. You know, find out what the number is. Mikom hakom his kiro b'lashon se'u. The Torah uses the term se'u. It could have said timne tifkod tispor. Instead it says se'u. And we find that in Kitisa and in Parashat Naso. So on a number of occasions the term se'u is used to raise something up. Ki mitzad ha-mispar yinatolein v'yinasa'ein b'yeter se'et al kol ha'amin. So he's saying, once you've got this number, you'll raise everybody up as being superior to all the other nations of the world. They don't have a specific number. It's like a bundle of hay. If you've got a haystack, you don't count how many blades of hay you've got in your haystack. It's a haystack. You maybe count how many haystacks you've got in your field, but you don't count how many pieces of hay there are. Kach ein le'umot hashkacha pratit kim klalit. So he's saying that there's a difference between Am Yisrael and Umot HaOlam. That Am Yisrael, every single individual is an individual to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is interested in every individual. With Umot HaOlam, he says, is that they're just regarded as one large unit. That's, they're not regarded as individual units, but they're regarded as large units. So therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of course, he's interested in what happens to the British people. That's as a nation rather than individuals. That's with Am Yisrael, he's interested in us also as every individual. And therefore the Kli Yakar is saying this term Se'u, Netrosh, means elevate every individual. Instead of just being part of the general mass, you're an important individual by yourself about whom HaKadosh Baruch Hu cares. Let's turn over. So we had at the end of in the second pasuk we said lemishpachotam levet avotam, right? Everybody's being counted in their family groups and in their according to their paternal houses. What does that mean, and why was that the case? So I think we could say that according to the Rashbam, who said this was getting ready to go into Eretz Yisrael, it was simply in terms of, you know, like you need for a census, you don't just want to know. You know, this is the difference between the census in Parashat Ki Tisa and the census now. Census in Parashat Ki Tisa, we just wanted to know a number. A number was what was important. How many Jews are there? Here, they're getting ready to go into Eretz Yisrael, so we want to know that sort of, we're looking at family units, at wider family units, the mishpachotam, the beit avotam. So mishpachotam is maybe, you know, small families. The beit avotam is the larger groupings of cousinhoods, as it were, those sorts of things. That's important when you're going into Eretz Israel and setting up a society. That's Rav Munk in his book, The Call of the Torah. He says a little bit differently, makes some interesting observations. According to their families of their paternal household. Here the Torah reveals a great principle, the importance of family life. The enumeration takes into account both the family, lemishpachotam, and the tribe, levet avotam. Every able-bodied man could serve the nation only when he fulfilled the immediate duties of family life, and the nation must promote and ensure the well-being of the family. The state is built upon the foundation of the family nucleus, without which there can be no state. That kind of fits in, again, with what I was saying. They're getting ready to go, whether they're getting ready to go to Eretz Yisrael, or they're just getting ready to live in the Midbar as a nation. The point that he's making is that a nation is not just made up of individuals, but it's made up of families, or the individuals are made up of their families. That's the individual is influenced by how he's developed within his family. And that's why it's important to mention the families and the tribes. In terms of a person will only be able to make a positive contribution to society if he's been nurtured by his family. And the welfare of his family serves to help the welfare of the nation. That's Rav Hirsch. In actual fact, says this. I think it's Rav Hirsch. It might be Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky. That's this notion of, you know, why is it that when a person gets married, they're exempt from the war effort, you know, for a year? That's in Parashat Ki Tetzé. So the answer is, or an answer is, that building a stable home is also a contribution to the welfare of society. That's a very powerful idea. So here, that's the relationship of the family with society. Now, why is it that people weren't counted until they were 20? So in part, it's, we saw the Rashbam, that you don't go to war till you're 20. Okay, why don't you go to war till you're 20? So quoting Rav Hirsch, I wasn't able to find the passage in Rav Hirsch, but Rav Munk says as follows, the Torah's concern for the family unit suggests an answer to another question. Since a young man becomes an adult in the eyes of law at the age of 13, why were men counted in the census only from the age of 20? The Torah probably wanted to reserve those first 7 years of maturity to implant the family's spiritual and moral values in the adolescent before giving him his duties as a member of the nation. Of course, even during his youth, every Jew must be ready to consider himself responsible before Hashem and to practice all his religious duties. Nevertheless, it would be harmful to give the young too great a responsibility in the affairs of the nation before they have completed their apprenticeship in life. So, saying for the first 7 years, you know, you basically want to stay at home from the age of 13 till 20. I think most teenagers between 13 and 20, they don't want to stay at home. But they ought to want to stay at home to be impacted on by their families. And that sort of, you know, kind of raises interesting questions, you know, say with regard to boarding schools, the yeshivot. You know, it's healthy to send off a 14-year-old to boarding school or to yeshiva, you know, to live away from home. I'm not 100% sure that it is healthy. You know, you need to get, you know, influence. I suppose it depends on what the relative influence is of the of the two environments. But whilst, you know, yeshiva has a lot to offer, and it turns people into being Talmidei Chachamim, hopefully, and Bnei Torah, that it doesn't necessarily, you know, prepare them for family life, that and for the contribution they're going to make to society. If we assume that, you know, society, you know, is influenced by the family, and you know, so that's like just, you know, an interesting question for us to ponder. So we have. Right, so we're told that the 12 tribes had to be counted. However, Moshe Rabbeinu was told, "Achet Matei Levi Lo Tifkod," you shouldn't count the tribe of Levi, "Vet Rosham Lo Tisa," and you shouldn't raise up their heads, "B'toch Bnei Israel," with the rest of Bnei Israel. "V'atafkeide Talvim Mishkan Haidut V'al Kol Kila V'Kol Asher Lo," you should appoint the Levim to be in charge of the Mishkan HaEdut and all its vessels and all everything associated with it. Hema Yisueta Mishkan Kokilav, they will carry the Mishkan and all its Kalim, Vahemi Sharatuhu, they will serve it, Vasaviv La Mishkan Yachanu, and they will camp around the Mishkan. Why is it that Bnei Levi weren't counted? They were counted separately. So there's sort of two censuses, big census and little census. Big census was all the rest of the Shvatim. And then little census was just the Levim. Why was it that the Levim couldn't be counted with everybody else? So Rashi gives us two answers. Achet Matei Levi Lo Tifkod. So you shouldn't count Matei Levi. Kedai hu ligayon shem melech liot nimne levado. The king's legion should be counted by itself. It's like pasnished. These are the elite. The Levim were the elite of Bnei Israel. They were the royal bodyguard, as it were. So, you know, you count them separately. It's more befitting for them to be separate to everybody else than mixed together. That's his first explanation. Davar Acher, and another explanation. Tzafa Kadosh Baruch Hu, she'atida la'amod gezeira al kol hanimnim miben eshrim shana v'amala. Kadosh Baruch Hu could foresee that there was going to be a gezeira in the future about all those who were aged 20 and upwards, she'amutu ba'midbar, they would die in the midbar. Amar, he said, alu elu bichlal, I don't want the Levim to be part of that grouping. Levi Shein Sheli, they're mine. Shelotau ba'egal, the Levim never erred with the Egal Hazahav, and therefore they don't deserve to die because of the chait of the Meraglim. The chait of the Meraglim was linked in with the chait of the Egel. It was a punishment that basically Chazal say that once the people sinned with the Egel, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made up his mind that he was going to wipe them out, but he held it off till the chait of the Meraglim. In any event, we've got two explanations here in Rashi. First reason is because the Levim were the elite, and the second is because he wanted them to be separate because the Gezeira about dying didn't apply to Shevet Levi. And as parenthetically, I'll just point out, it's one of the things I've probably said before. We have in our minds that what we were taught at Cheder or Hebrew classes or whatever it was, right? That, you know, who were the only people who left Mitzrayim to go into Eretz Israel? Joshua and Caleb. That's not entirely true. That the Levium didn't die as a result, so lots of Levium would have gone into Eretz Israel. There are all the people who were under the age of 20 who came out of Mitzrayim. And there's a Rashi later on in Sefer Bamidbar, which tells us that women also didn't die as a result. So you had lots of women who'd come out of Mitzrayim and went into Eretz Israel. So in actual fact, that's more than half the people who came out of Mitzrayim went into Eretz Israel. That's sort of an aside. In any event, whenever Rashi gives us two explanations, we want to know what was wrong with the first one that he has to give us the second. So I found an answer in the Baruch Tanura's commentary on Rashi. Baruch Tanura says, so he quotes Rashi's first explanation, Achet matei lavi lo tifkod, kedai hu ligayon shem melech liyot nimne levado, davar achet tzafah kadosh baruch hu, kashem mai davar achet, right? So he says, well, we've got a problem, why have we got this davar achet? Yesh lomar, the answer must be, delefi peirush harishon, according to the first explanation, lo shayach milat ach. Okay, it doesn't make sense to have, if you look in the beginning of Pasuk Memtet, it says, ach et matei levi. Ach means you're excluding something, shehu lishon miut. Lekach pirish davar acher, that's why we have to have the davar acher, shememah etotan lamut bamidbar, im sha'ar Yisrael hanimnim mi ben kaf. That they're excluded from dying in the midbar with everybody else who was age 20. So the term ach means that there's something exceptional going on here. It's not just, Kadosh Baruch Hu regarded them as superior, but there's a reason, there's something, lashon miut, they've been excluded from something to do with everybody else. So it seems that Rashi's preferred reason is, kizayhu ligayon shel melech liyot nimne levado, but he's still left with a problem because it says ach. Ach means stop, you know, I don't want these to get mixed together because I don't want something that's happening to the one group to happen to the other group. So we have a very significant part of the parasha deals with the Degalim, the flags and banners with which the camp was arranged. So you have the Mishkan, and on each side of the Mishkan, the way it's always portrayed, unless I've missed something, the way I've always portrayed seems to be it was arranged like a square. Got three tribes on one side, three tribes on the other side, three tribes on the other side, and three tribes on the other side. It's occurred to me on several occasions that it could possibly, at least theoretically, it could have been a circle. And you still had three, you know, primarily on one side, three primarily on the other side, three primarily on the third side, three primarily on the fourth. In actual fact, everybody would have been equidistant, if that had been the case, from the center. It's certainly clear that's the way some of the Mefarshim understood it to be square. I'm not sure from the Pesukim at all that it had to be a square arrangement. And I'm wondering if, you know, it could have been a circular arrangement. In any event, you've got three tribes on each side. And within the arrangement of three tribes, you've got one leading tribe and then two associated tribes. So there's a machloket in the Mefarshim. We're told that there were these banners that Ishal Diglo, Yah Levet Avotam Yachanu Bnei Yisrael, Mineged Saviv Lo Moed. Everybody would camp around with their degel. So there's a machloket actually how many degalim there were. Were there just four degalim, one for each of the four leading tribes, or were there 12 degalim? Maybe with a large one for the leading tribe and then smaller ones for the accompanying tribes. So that's a machloket between the Abarbanel and other Mefarshim. So there's some discussion about why they were arranged in the particular orders that they were arranged. And we've got Aral Bug who addresses it. We'll just sort of take an example from the first case. We won't go through the whole Aral Bug here. But he says, so this is how they were camped. So on the Mizrach side, you had the tribe of Yehuda. Mizrach was apparently the most important area. Yehuda was the most important of the Shvatim. Kimimenu Hugbala Liot HaMelucha was arranged that the Melucha royalty would descend from Yehuda. So who's alongside him? Other tribes, Reuven was from Leah, and then the next two tribes from Leah, Al Madregotehem, by seniority, Vahem Yisachar Uzvulun. Now, Yisachar and Zvulun weren't the second and third tribes to be born, but in terms of seniority, they were. So that's why it was like that on that side. So you have to try and work out. Next question is, you know, why do we say that Yisachar and Zvulun were next in seniority? Why wasn't Shimon next in seniority? Shimon was older than Yisachar and Zvulun. So those are all sorts of questions. Don't want to lose too much sleep about it now. I want to lose lots of sleep about it, but not now. To take another comment from Rav Munk, I think, though, is well worthwhile. He makes the following observation. There is an almost military aspect to the early chapters of the Book of Numbers. Units are formed, leaders are appointed, marching orders are given, and instructions for encampment are issued. Hashem did not turn the people into a military organization. So point number one is don't make the mistake of thinking this was one big Soviet-style army. But he did endow them with the worthwhile qualities of discipline and order. Wanted them to realize you're not a rabble any longer. So necessary to Israel for its future role. The nation needed to be a cohesive unit, obeying instructions and following orders, not a band of slaves having just fled their master. So it's really about, you know, you've got to pull yourselves into line, tidy yourselves up and look smart. That's it, you know, get yourself organized. Don't be disorganized, but be organized. So again, this is something I've thought about for, you know, on and off for many years, and just sort of share with you a thought. I have to tell you, this suits me very, very nicely. I like things to be neat and organised. You know, this is not quite squared up here, this book with the table, but I like it to be. I like everything to be neat in its correct place. You know, when I sit at the dinner table, you know, somebody's put something in and it's pointing the wrong way. I like to spray everything to be parallel lines or, you know, all that sort of thing. I try to be a very organized, orderly person. So this speaks to me, right? But there are some people who thrive in chaos. They don't regard it as chaos. They regard it as vibrancy or whatever you want. You know, they don't like to be stifled. So to my mind, you see this picture of the Israelite camp, you know, everybody in their exact right place. That speaks very much to me. This is the way a nation should be. But somebody else will say, no, you know, there should be more fluidity, more flexibility for a nation. So if it speaks to you, this is a very good answer. You know, that you've got, now become a nation. You want everything to be, it's almost a bit like the difference between town planning in America and here. I don't know if it's like this in every city in America, but, you know, many cities in America, it's the grid system. And everything is, you know, grids and, you know, all fits in perfectly and you need to go from 87th Street to 93rd Street. You know exactly that's where you're supposed to be going. If you come to a town, a city, an area in England, you know, the roads go all over the place. You know, I never worked out, you know, was there any planning or was it random or what was it? This is the American model. It pains me to say this. You know, the way they arranged it in the Midbar was the American model. The British model would have just not been acceptable. That's, which, you know, some people like the British model. So it's just, you know, a question to raise. So we're told that the Ohel Moed, with the camp of the Levim around it, was in the middle of the Machanot, and that they travelled in formation the same way that they were, the same way that they were camped. Ishal Yadol Diglehem, each person alongside his flag. Rav Moshe Sternbach in Talmud Dat makes a nice drasha here. Remesh miteva b'nei adam shemikilim ba'ol ha-mitzvot. He says, it's, you know, this is a characteristic, this is the way people tend to be. They tend to be a bit lenient about mitzvot. U'mitrapim b'yirat shamayim. And their the yirat shamayim becomes weakened. U'v'limud ha-torah. And their learning slacks off. Biyotam baderech, when they're on a journey. When a person's away from home, when you're traveling, you're not quite as makpid as you are when you're at home. The kan ne'mar, but here we've got a pasuk, kashe yachanu kin yisau. That's, as they camp, that's how they have to travel. Hainu anaga chayevet liyot tamid kapdanit zihira mudukdeket kivachanaya kein binasiya. That, when you're traveling, you have to be as close to the Mishkan HaEidot in the middle of your life as you do when you're stationary. You know, mitzvah observance is for whatever, you know, situation you find yourself in. And that's a drash he takes out from that that pasuk. Let's just finish off with a Chassidish avort on that. That's, I don't quote many Chassidish avorts in the Shiurim by... Just came across a new chumash with lots of them, some of them very nice and thought-provoking. Kashe yachanu ken yisau, l'umat ze shadam mashpilatzmo, the more that, or corresponding to the degree to which a person lowers himself, makes himself humble, kashe yachanu, okay, that means you sort of rest, so you rest on the ground. Zochehu lehitalot b'yeter sa'et. So you'll correspondingly be raised up by HaKadosh Baruch Hu kein yisau, so they will be lifted up. So kasher yachanu, as people lower themselves, kein yisau, correspondingly HaKadosh Baruch Hu will ultimately raise us up. If we want to be raised up by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the way to achieve that isn't by... getting big ideas about ourselves into our heads, but rather it's having modest thoughts about ourselves, and then in return, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will promote us as we deserve. So let's leave that there for this evening. That's got Shavuot, of course, at the weekend.